Country Why on ABC Radio.
Ultimately, we have animals in society because they turn food that we can't eat into food that we can.
Now when I pick up a carrot, it's not just an ordinary carrot.
Country Why.
30,000 tonnes a week, something like that.
That doesn't even cover the issue on broadband.
Climb down off your ivory tower in Canberra. You've never set foot on a farm.
Country Why. The politics of food and farming on ABC Radio.
Hello, Eden Henenham with you for this week's episode of Countrywide. I'm looking forward to your company over the next half hour. Well, today on the program, a Kangaroo Island sheep farmer was stuck in Bendigo in central Victoria this past week following the cancellation of the Australian Sheep and Wool Show.
For about 24 hours we went to preparing our sheep to, what can we do?
And what has college life been like for regional students who have moved to the city to live and study during COVID-19?
I had one class a week in person and then two pracs for a different subject in person. I struggled to learn on my own in a room by myself.
Well, more on that shortly, but first, a Kangaroo Island sheep farmer was stuck in Bendigo in central Victoria this past week following the cancellation of the 2021 Australian Sheep and Wool Show. Jared McCardle from Talja Polworths was all set up for the show when the Victorian lockdown was announced and the show was cancelled. He says the Kangaroo Island ferry had been cancelled due to bad weather, and even if he could get to South Australia early, he wouldn't have anywhere to keep his sheep. He spoke to Brooke Neindorf earlier on Friday morning about the frantic 24-hour period.
Well, yesterday morning we were all going on as per usual, just preparing our sheep for showing today, and obviously the Victorian government had their announcement at 1 o'clock. We sort of ahed about going home, but as the weather is pretty bad, we've got the ferry to catch from Cape Jervis and found that probably the most boats are going to be cancelled today to cross over to Kangaroo Island. So, and the show society said that we can keep our sheep here for as long as we need. So we thought that's probably our best port of call at the moment, really. We brought plenty of feed over just in case things went terrible. And for about 24 hours we went to preparing our sheep to, what can we do?
Was there any thoughts to try and get back into South Australia in case you do have to quarantine when you get back? Do you know what has to happen from here?
Not really. On air, like I said, we rang up the Sealink boat yesterday, and they said that the boat would most likely be cancelled today because of the rough weather, and because we're at MN3 status, we couldn't go to anyone's place along the way and just put our sheep on a place. We have to think about those restrictions, as it were, and
So your best bet for your sheep in particular was just to stay in Bendigo?
To stay, we've got feed, we've got yards, and we didn't fancy having them stay in the back of the ute for what might be 3 days.
What were organisers saying to you, in the lead up, and when was there much talk about whether there'd be another lockdown in Victoria?
Look, about 2 o'clock yesterday, there was a big kerfuffle about what was going to happen, and it sounded like Victoria was going to be in lockdown, the borders were going to be shut. So in that respect, we decided to wait it out because there was a very, very small chance that we might still be able to have a closed show, as it were, and we didn't want to travel, 800 kilometres just for nothing.
Are there many other South Australian breeders there, Jared, that travel?
We ran into Brenton and Joe Lush from Inman Valley. They were over showing Corridales, and we've had a lot to do with the Lushes over the years. And they said they had to, they were going to go basically 3 o'clock yesterday, so they did. Our judge for the Polworths, she was from South Australia. She left, and a few merino breeders I know were sort of just waiting at the border yesterday, or just pulled out the event earlier, so they didn't even bother in the end. And so that's I haven't heard of any other breeders or who managed to make the trip or anything like that from South Australia, no.
How disappointing is it? This is obviously the second year in a row this has had to be cancelled. How disappointing is it for breeders and those involved and the organisers and you know people that are there showing products and things like that as well?
Oh, it's very disappointing. And the mood this morning was everyone's very flat. You know, Peter English, who's the treasurer of the society, he said they were making a big effort to have it go ahead no matter what. And he said a month ago that there'd been a lot pull out, but they were still hoping that it would all go ahead. And basically up until about 2 o'clock yesterday, it was going to be all systems go. But yeah, unfortunately, it hasn't happened, and everyone's just feeling a bit down this morning.
With a lot of Merino breeders, they go to this show in preparation for their ram sales coming up. Is this something that you've got a sale coming up, or what do you use this show for in particular, Jared?
We use it as a promotion for our breed, as it were, because the Polworth isn't a major breed as it used to be. We've always said it's an Australian breed, bred for Australian conditions, and we use it as a huge promotion for our sheep to get it out, and we believe that it has done us very very well to get our name known out and about as Taljo Polworth and what we're about. So. Yeah.
What's your plans for the next couple of days, Jared?
We're going to be in touch with SeaLink, who run the boat over from Cape Jervis to Penishaw, and we're going to see what the plans there are first. So if we can get onto the boat before the 5 days, we will. Now, if we have to quarantine at home, we have to quarantine. But, yeah, it's very much at the moment what the weather does and how rough it does get over there. So at this stage, we're still unknown. We're booked to go back on Monday morning, which is when we were going to come back. So yeah, at this stage, that's the plan at the moment. But yeah, if we can get earlier, we will.
Kangaroo Island sheep farmer Jared McCardle speaking there with Brooke Neindorf. Well, sticking with this week's COVID-19 news, under new directions issued by the South Australian government this week, truck drivers crossing the Victoria-South Australia border we'll have to get a COVID test as often as every 48 hours. Rural reporter Angus Furley spoke with Steve Shearer, Executive Officer of the South Australian Road Transport Association, about what that's going to mean for truck drivers.
All essential traveller heavy vehicle drivers who've spent any time anywhere in Victoria or New South Wales or the ACT will have to undergo a COVID test within 24 hours of entry into South Australia, unless they can show they've had a test in the prior 48 hours. The problem with that will be, you know, for occasional truck drivers coming across, that might not be a big issue, but for all the drivers who routinely two, three or even four times a week cross the border, depending on precisely what work they're doing, that means they're going to have to be tested every second day.
Getting tested every second day. I think during a previous border restriction, there was a test per week requirement, but every second day, is that even possible?
Well, there are two issues there, really. One is whether or not the testing system and infrastructure can meet that demand. We don't think it will, because it wasn't meeting the demand before, for two reasons. Not all truck drivers are able to access a testing facility between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., SA Health knows that, and I've discussed it with them again this week, and they're looking at having longer and hopefully some nighttime hours. But truck drivers don't actually have a lot of spare time. A professional truck driver has a 14-hour working day, an hour to an hour and a half of short rests, and a 7-hour sleep break requirement. That leaves them an hour and a half to 2 hours maximum to get up, have a shower, eat, and do everything else they need to do, and line up and get a test. Now, that's extremely difficult. Once a week, you can almost handle it, because on your day off or 2 days off, you might be able to go and do it. But if you have to do it every second day, that means you have to do it on work days, and they won't have the ability, generally, many of them, to access a testing facility and actually get the test. And I've discussed that with the government, so that's a major problem. The other big problem is drivers saying increasingly, and we're already seeing this, we've been seeing it for a little while, but it will now get worse, I'm not going to have a swab up my nose that often. And they were saying that about the once-a-week regime. Every second day, we know we're going to lose significant numbers of drivers. And that's important because if we lose too many drivers, we won't be able to keep sustaining the community in any state. And I'll give you an example. Just one truck company here in Adelaide sends 35 B-doubles of fresh produce every night to the Sydney markets. Every night.
So, Steve, it is at that point, that level of frustration or exasperation among truck drivers that they're just saying, I'm not going to put up with these restrictions or requirements that are being imposed on me anymore, and I'm going to go and do something else.
Yeah. We've got many companies who are telling us that, you know, have been for a while, that they're losing drivers. Now, you know, we've been coping, but it's increasingly a struggle. And to shift to testing every 2 days for many drivers who do this regular work. There, you know, there are drivers who go all over the country and they do different things each week or each day, but there's a hell of a lot of drivers, thousands of them, who do the same thing day in, day out on the same route, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. And those drivers are the ones who get hit by this. And we accept the need to be COVID safe. We've worked with the government and we continue to work with the government. But given our brilliant safety record so far, the question we're putting to government is, and to the medical officials, have you actually got the balance right?
Steve, you said that you've been speaking with the South Australian government, but is there any prospect that this requirement changes, given that these really hardline approaches to border closures have worked politically?
My job is to push as hard as I can to make sure we get the best balance. We are not trying to just get a free run for the trucking industry, because we've proven how responsible we are. And we don't want COVID either. We don't want our businesses shut down. We don't want our people harmed. But we're just challenging officials at the moment about whether they've got the balance right. And I've got a real concern that later today there'll be more directions that will come out because of, you know, developments overnight in Victoria.
That was Steve Shearer, Executive Officer of the South Australian Road Transport Association, speaking there with Angus Furley. South Australian Health and South Australia Police have been contacted for comment. Well, as universities across the country begin recruiting next year's students, a return to face-to-face learning for courses like agriculture is central to their pitch. But as the New South Wales outbreak worsens and moves across Victoria, will they be able to deliver on their promise? For those students who've already made the journey to capital cities from regional towns, another year of isolation may be too much to bear, and many are now questioning their future careers. For agriculture student Macy Holland, her first year at university has left her feeling ill-equipped to work on farms.
With agriculture, probably me coming into it was thinking that I was going to be able to go out and get some on-farm experience and talk to people from the industry that have had life experience and kind of gauge what I might want to do from those individuals. Except obviously, unfortunately, due to COVID, we haven't really been able to go outside and get those experiences.
Like many rural students, Macy Holland had to relocate to Melbourne for her tertiary studies. But the pandemic has forced her animal dissection and farming classes online, leaving her with little time spent in the field or the laboratory.
It is quite challenging and it is quite different, but I suppose we've just kind of adapted and, you know, tried to do the best we can.
I thought there'd be a lot more, obviously, on-campus events, a lot more people, like, communicating with each other. I found it really difficult to make friends with other people because you're not really going to classes because it's all online. It was a lot of challenging stuff going on.
For first-year science student Brianna Kennedy, university life hasn't been what it was cracked up to be either. The 19-year-old moved from Shepparton in north central Victoria at the beginning of the year to study and live at a residential college in Melbourne. But since starting her degree, she spent more time at home than on campus.
I had one class a week in person and then two pracs for a different subject in person. I struggled to learn on my own in a room by myself.
And while COVID-19 restrictions have eased across Victoria, the outbreak in New South Wales shows how quickly things can change. At many campuses, it's left student morale at an all-time low. James Hardiman is the Dean of Students at St Hilda's College at the University of Melbourne.
I think that there has been a lot of challenges for a lot of students in way of managing, you know, their own well-being and their own mental health as far as things like anxiety goes when it comes to what's coming next and understanding what their next 6 months is going to look like, and we've certainly seen that. And I think that that is likely to diminish the experience and the way that students learn and engage with that content. And so I am worried about the impact that that's going to have.
But with college accommodation costing as much as $30,000 a year, and families are locked into those contracts regardless of how much coursework is delivered in class, universities are under pressure to deliver more. James Hardiman is hopeful about next semester.
We're quite lucky, certainly at the University of Melbourne, COVID pending, that the university is committed to moving those subjects that would typically be face-to-face, things like laboratories and workshops and anatomy classes and all those sorts of things. 90% of those subjects will be back face-to-face, pending any restrictions and challenges that might come in, which has been met with overwhelming positivity from the students.
Some of the nation's most popular tertiary institutions, like Monash, the University of Queensland and the University of Sydney, told the ABC that 80 to 90% of classes will be available face-to-face next semester. And as she looks towards a career in agriculture, Macy Holland hopes that promise rings true.
A really big part of agriculture and in the agriculture industry is obviously networking and building those relationships with people for future opportunities. So when that's kind of taken away, at no one's fault, but it just kind of gets a little bit frustrating, and it does make you worry and kind of anticipate the future because you're not really sure what that might look like.
Agriculture student Macy Holland ending that story.
From the top end to Tassie, Countrywide on ABC Radio.
As you may have heard in the news this week, charges against a Queensland woman accused of putting needles in strawberries have been dropped. It forced supermarkets to recall thousands of punnets of the fruit, eventually costing the industry more than $150 million in lost sales. ABC court reporter in Brisbane, Talissa Siganto, explains further to Amy Phillips.
Well, in 2018, the very first needle inside a strawberry was discovered in early September. It was when a man bit into one he'd bought at a Queensland supermarket. Now, over the series of a few weeks, more than 100 reports of needles ended up being reported inside the fruit, and a large number of those police said they were believed to be planted by copycat from that original few that were first popping up in those first couple of weeks. This obviously at the time sparked a major food safety crisis, and it triggered Queensland's chief health officer to come out and warn people to throw out certain brands of strawberries from their homes, and then they started being stripped from shelves. This obviously caused a flow-on effect to farmers and growers who were forced to destroy entire crops, with financial losses at the time to the industry estimated at more than $150 million. Now, about 2 months after that first report, police announced they'd made an arrest, and it was a woman named Maya Trun who had been a farm supervisor at the Berrylicious farm in Caboolture, which is north of Brisbane. At the time, police alleged she'd put the needles in the strawberries as an act of sabotage, and her motive was spite or revenge against the business owners. She was charged with 8 counts of contamination of goods with intent to cause economic loss, and she was facing a maximum of 10 years in prison for the offences.
So why were those charges dropped this morning?
Well, no exact reason has been divulged by the Director of Prosecutions. Generally, when charges are dropped, it's because the Crown has decided its case is unlikely to lead to a conviction in a jury trial, meaning there's either a problem with witnesses or evidence, and they think it just won't stack up. Now, Trin was expected to face a 4-week trial in the district court. She was committed to stand trial in 2018. Over the past few days, there's still been legal argument, and it was meant to start on Monday, so that was delayed. Judge Michael Byrne this morning told Ms. Trin through her interpreters that the prosecution have indicated they will no longer proceed against her, and she was free to leave the dock, and she did that outside court. Her defence lawyer, Nick Dorr, thanked her supporters and said it was a huge relief and that this time had been really taxing on her, and that ultimately the right decision was made.
So what happens now, if anything?
She is a free woman. She's no longer charged and will no longer have to face a court. As for the director of prosecutions, they can't charge her with the same thing if that was something they even planned to do. So at this stage, we've asked them if their investigation is still ongoing or if they plan to make any more charges in the future.
Talisa Siganto, ABC court reporter in Brisbane. Two men have been convicted of major cattle thefts this past week, totaling over $1 million worth of livestock in Queensland. A 58-year-old Kapalaba man was this week sentenced to 2 years in jail and ordered to pay restitution after pleading guilty in the Townsville Magistrates Court to stealing 280 head of unprocessed cattle. Last month, a 36-year-old Atherton man was sentenced to 3 years and 9 months imprisonment in the Cairns District Court for stealing 664 head of unprocessed cattle. Tom Major spoke with Agforce Cattle Council President Will Wilson, who says the convictions are welcome, but harsher penalties are needed.
Well, yeah, certainly very important. It's always something as a cattle owner that you're concerned about continually. To see the major organised crime squad getting some convictions is always enlightening, because I know how hard it is for them, unfortunately, to get convictions on cattle theft. The thefts of that sort of value are just unseen in society nowadays without major convictions. So I really hope that this one follows through and sets a bit of a bar that A, helps the major organised crime squad and also deters people, because the people that are convicted are taken for an example.
Will Wilson, the theft of these cattle is estimated at a value of over $1 million. Do you believe the sentences of 3 years and 9 months and 2 years for the two convicted men, is that harsh enough?
Well, I certainly think that it's got to be seen as like for like. So, you know, if you were to rob a bank for $1 million, what would the penalty be and how long would you be prosecuted for? And I'm not 100% sure that sort of theft from something like a bank would be seen as lightly. I think it'd be seen a fair bit more severely. So this is probably an indication that theft of values of what we're talking about in this sort of theft should be higher.
Is the traceability and identification of stolen cattle, is it improving over the years?
Well, it's an issue that we've always had over the years. I mean, a lot of the reason from ownership is not part of our traceability at the moment. And if we could have had that part of our traceability, it would obviously deter a lot of the people that are in the market of pinching cattle.
Are you hearing that this is a growing issue, particularly with the incredibly high cattle prices across Australia at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I am hearing a fair bit about it and a fair bit of concern around it, and mainly in our industry systems and how we can make our industry systems A, deter and B, prevent the theft of animals.
You definitely hate to blame the graziers at any rate for what are the actions of criminals in this case, but what can producers do to better safeguard themselves against being the victims of such crimes?
Well, obviously, having records, it helps the major organised crime squad to be able to get the convictions. I mean, I know of stories of smaller thefts that are always harder to get convictions on. So having evidence is obviously the key, and being vigilant on what's going on their properties.
Will Wilson, Agforce Queensland Cattle Board Chairman, speaking there with Tom Major. And ending on a more positive note this week, it's been an incredible year for tractor dealers, with low interest rates, tax incentives and good conditions fueling a sales boom. Figures released by the Tractor and Machinery Association of Australia this month show 15,800 units were sold last financial year. But can these big sales numbers continue? Lachlan Bennett has the story.
It's been a massive year for tractor sales. The number of units has jumped 29% across Australia, and the sales aren't slowing down for Tasmanian dealer Wayne Elphinston of Gaffney's Machinery.
July is normally no leads are coming in, things are pretty quiet, you can catch up on your paperwork and your warranties, but not at the moment. We're still getting many leads coming through each of our branches, so it's still full noise. Probably some of our seasons are a bit later. People wanting to feed out cattle, there's more beef cattle out there. Dairy's doing very well, so, you know, your bale feeders, you know, your hay silage bale feeders, things like that. But even still in tractors in general. And then people are starting to plan ahead for the coming grass season, you know, your hay season. So, yeah, no, it's full steam ahead at the minute.
And it's not just in Tasmania. There's been a huge increase in sales in the past year across Australia. What does that mean for supply?
You can look at your areas in New South Wales and your Gippsland areas and down the Warrnambool areas. They've had huge years. So where they wouldn't have had a bigger year, we could grab and tap some of the supplies out of the factories. But at the moment, they're grabbing as much out of the factories as we are. So supply is very, very hard at the minute.
So how does this all play out on the shop floor? How do you manage those increasing requests for machinery?
Hard work at the moment. Normally, there would be tractors coming out of factories that you can, that they'll just put through the factory and then you can grab them as they're coming through. But unfortunately, at the moment, everyone else is grabbing those. We're at the moment planning ahead more than normal where we would normally grab tractors coming out of the factory. We're now putting tractor orders in. So we've become a bit like an importer in a fashion. Big risk, but then it's a bigger risk not to do something like that.
So you're making larger orders, planning further in ahead, just trying to get yourself ready for the next year and what I imagine is another big year of sales.
That's right, yeah. So we're looking at our bread and butter models. So they're the ones that sell well for us. So they're not a high risk of, you know, ordering a heap of tractors. And at the moment, tractors, we're ordered quite a few tractors, but they've got names on those already. So it's a selling feature of saying a tractor's going to be due here in August. And it's easy work for our sales guys at the moment because the customer's got no choice. He can't muck around because that could be going anywhere around Australia. If we knew New South Wales, or if the farmer knew New South Wales was going badly, or the Gippsland area or Queensland, the customers would then know, oh, it won't be, no one else is going to buy that tractor. I'll sit on it for a couple of days, see me accountant. But at the moment, you've got to jump or jump off, you know.
We're saying that it's probably the biggest year of tractor sales since the early 1980s.
That's Gary Northover, the Executive Director of the Tractor and Machinery Association of Australia.
We sold in excess of 15,800 tractors for the year, which is up about 30% on the previous year, and really caught us all by surprise, to be honest. The strength of the market just continued month after month, and it's still pretty strong today.
And I imagine for manufacturers and dealers, it's great to have such high demand. But what does that mean for them at the coalface, actually trying to get these machines out and ready?
It's been an outstanding job to deliver this many machines to the marketplace in a time when, you know, we were dealing with the COVID restrictions and various other rolling lockdowns and the like, and not to mention challenges with shipping delays and parts availability. So a fantastic effort to get this job done. Those issues I mentioned about shipping and the like just haven't gone away. They're probably being exacerbated, if anything. So I think they've been doing it pretty tough out there.
And is there any end in sight in terms of either that rising demand or those challenges the industry is dealing with?
Well, in terms of demand, we clearly in new territory here, so I'm not exactly sure what happens next.
Tractor and Machinery Association of Australia, Executive Director Gary Northover, ending that report from Lachlan Bennett. And that's all for this week's episode of Countrywide. You can read all of these stories and more online at abc.net.au/rural. And you can also listen back to this podcast on the ABC Listen app. I'm Eden Henninen. Have a great week.
Countrywide on ABC Radio.
I'm absolutely calling on the Deputy Prime Minister to pay attention to his own report.
Growers work from sun up to sundown, so
Countrywide.
We need to speak to these growers 1 o'clock in the morning.
And to actually act on behalf of the farmers.
They're going to get it from the Yanks or the French or whoever. So let's get our foot in the door and let's be the first.
Countrywide, the politics of food and farming on ABC Radio.